The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Hi, welcome to the show. Nicole Sandler here on a Wednesday. David's telling me he has no sound on either app. Okay, I'm going to try one other thing. Let's try it this way, and that doesn't work either. Oh, man. All right, bear with me. I think we should be on YouTube, though. You don't hear anything on YouTube either. Oh, God, you know, and I thought I had all the, hold on one second. I'm gonna get you from here. Okay, now we should have audio there, and we should have audio on YouTube. I think we fixed the problem. I'm watching YouTube. 3, 2, 1. Give it a second. I think I got it fixed. Oh, man. You know, here I was thinking, again, I thought I had everything set up right. You hear it now on YouTube? Yes. All right. Better late than never. I think today should be flawless. All right. And I was going to tell you, at least I'm not the only one. Did you hear what happened with CBS News last night? Well, CBS last night... there was no CBS Evening News on the East Coast when, I don't know what time it's on, 6:30 maybe? When 6:30 rolled around, what happened is CBS, they started playing stuff off the web and their online feed. The Evening News did not air on the East Coast because of technical problems, because... You know, now look, I'm seeing all of these foul ups on TV. I was watching some of MSNBC this morning, and I was noticing Bernie Sanders was being interviewed by Stephanie Ruhle, so I stopped to watch it, and the sync was off. You know, because they're using Zoom and Skype and FaceTime and things like that. So I was like, okay, misery loves company. It's not only me. But anyway, yes, PBS NewsHour had a glitch last night too. No visual, just sound for a while. So, look, I don't feel so bad. It's just me. I see Paul Leary is helping out today. he's remoted into my setup. So hopefully he can help fend off any problems that may arise. But I think we're good. I think we're going to be okay today. Think being the operative word here. Anyway, we have a wonderful guest coming up. I actually reached out to Ellie Mastal last week when I was watching, or actually listening, to the Supreme Court hearings. It was history in the making. First time ever that live Supreme Court arguments were streamed, right? And the first time ever that the Supreme Court heard arguments over the telephone. But what was more interesting to me, because I'm a big fan of Ellie Mastal's, both his writing at The Nation and his Twitter feed, which is at Ellie E-L. Anyway, I think we're still on, but if YouTube goes out, and it just went out. This is an internet. All right, it looks like it's coming back now. It must be just an AT&T internet glitch. Stand by, YouTube. It's on the way back. And by YouTube, I'm talking about also Facebook Live and Periscope. I think we're streaming on all of those, and we're back. So, you know, that some things are beyond my control. Actually, all of it's beyond my control. I don't know about you. I think I could use something funny, right? All right. The question is, should I play the video from the streaming software or from my other computer and try to bring it in remotely? I honestly, we're going to try to bring it in remotely because I'll have fewer problems with the audio. I'm not sure which one I want to play. I've got a couple of videos standing by for your comedy pleasure. All right, I'll do this one. It's the latest offering from Shirley Sherban. Now, if you're a regular listener to the show, Shirley is somebody that I met online. She, in my quarantine calling, she's in New Zealand. And I found Shirley because she's been producing tons of these wonderfully funny and very musically lovely parody songs. She turns out she's not a singer. She's not a performer by profession. She's the principal of a small school in New Zealand, and she moonlights as a photographer. But while she's been home quarantining, she's been making these parody videos, and they're wonderful. I both love and hate people that talented at the same time. So anyway, with no further ado, here's the latest from Shirley Sherban from New Zealand, where the quarantine has been lifted because they believe in New Zealand they've eradicated the COVID. Go figure. New Zealand, you go. All right, here we go. Ah, I think. Come on, play. Oh, I guess I didn't hit play. Here we go.
Why do friends quickly disappear every time you are near? Just like me, they don't want to be close to you. Why do they run away and hide every time you walk by? Just like me, they don't want to be close to you. The day you sneezed, we warned you to please use your elbow. You decided to not leash in your shoes. So you sprinkled moist breath in our hair. I'm cold and shaky when I think of you. That is why I'll stay out of town every time you're around. Just like me, they don't want to be close to you. Begged you, even warned you to wash your hands better. You decided you had other things to do. So everything you've touched, underwear, old tissues, shoes, their germs are still on you. That is why we don't stick around. Your hygiene weighs us down. Just like me, they don't want to be close to you. Just like me, they don't want to be close to you.
Ah, the wonderful musical stylings of Shirley Sherban channeling Karen Carpenter. She's very talented and quite prolific as well. So that was fun. All right. I know, yesterday in the middle of all these technical problems, I did play for you the newest Randy Rainbow, but I know it didn't go out over YouTube because, because I was having technical problems, and frankly, I forgot to start the YouTube streaming when I hit the video. So why not? Let's It's Wednesday. We've got Ellie Mistel coming up. There's so much to talk about. I do have the news to get to. I'm procrastinating. I'll get to the news in a moment. But first, why not share with you the Randy Rainbow song? And the reason I'm doing this, well, aside from it's really good and we could use a laugh and we love Randy Rainbow, that this song is just spot on. Because what we've been discussing here in the privacy of my home with my husband, whose birthday it is today, by the way, happy birthday, David, that everything Donald Trump is doing right now is simply a distraction. He is trying to distract us all from the fact that 93,000 Americans have died, that in terms of the death toll, we are more than double, actually more than triple, I believe, the next country in line. And I if I remember correctly, I want to say it's the Soviet Union or Soviet Union. Oh my God, talk about a brain fart. Russia, formerly part of the Soviet Union. Wow. All right. I think I just need another song to get my equilibrium. So we'll let Randy Rainbow have at it. Here we go. And my apologies for yesterday.
Thank you for respecting recommended CDC guidelines and wearing a mask. Oh, that's just your face.
He's not wearing a mask.
Let's discuss the unfortunate matter at hand, the global crisis that is devastating countless American lives, wreaking economic havoc, the reason that we have all been forced to take shelter in our homes. Obamagate. What is that?
It was the greatest political crime in the history of our country.
Some of your harshest critics say that these attacks on the former president and your recent Twitter tantrums are meant to distract from your failed coronavirus response.
We're of the assumption that by the end of the year, we're going to have a vaccine.
Ooh, could you hold off on that just a little longer? It's going to take me a while to lose all the quarantine weight.
Look, the less successful we are in opening, the better they are probably, maybe, for an election. But I'm letting people know, in many cases, they're doing it just for...
A global pandemic. Sounds like some fictional Steven Soderbergh bullshit from 2011, right? Believe it or not, it's a real thing. People are suffering. Millions are out of work. The economy has evaporated. And worst of all, I haven't had a haircut in more than 2 months. So how does an unprepared reality TV host pretending to be the president deal with such an unprecedented crisis? I can tell you in one word.
This was all Obama.
Distraction. Distraction.
This was all Biden.
Distraction.
Distraction. Distraction.
And we caught them.
Distraction. La 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 la. La 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 la. How he tries to occupy your mind. To perplex you. He deflects to any shiny object he can find.
They wanted Hillary Clinton to win.
So many people fighting for their lives or scared to lose their jobs and stuck inside their houses. Thousands of people dying on your watch. And who is it you're thinking of?
Obama?
Obama! Obama!
That's the enemy of the people.
Distraction! Obama!
It is a disgrace.
Distraction!
We've done more testing than all of the countries in the world.
Anyone who wants can get a test, he shouts. A proper test, a perfect test. Where the hell are all these perfect tests, he touts. There's only one thing on his freaking mind.
Sleepy Joe Biden.
Election! Election!
I'm getting really good poll numbers.
Distraction! Deception! Deception!
Over 10 million tests.
In action.
They've never gotten over losing to me.
We hope that you might lead us with some dignity and tact. We thought you'd somehow grow from this, but girl, you're petty. Confusion.
Make America great again, right?
Recession. Election.
Inaction.
Nancy Pelosi's a disaster.
Distraction.
Obamagate.
Hydroxychloroquine. Maybe that's a question you should ask China.
He tries his best to baffle as he stupefies and stalls. How long till he just starts posting pictures of his balls?
Vom.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Everybody disagreed when I did that.
Disgusting.
Look, there were a number of questions raised by the actions of the Obama administration.
Destruction.
This was all Obama.
So many people fight for their lives, but it's right from the shops, from the streets, from their houses, and thousands of people die on your watch. Now, Joe's going to go.
It is a disgrace what's happened.
Destruction!
Oh, man.
Obamagate.
Obamagate. Oy, oy, oy. Randy Rainbow is a genius. I'm glad I played it again because, honestly, yesterday when I played it, I was so busy trying to fix all the technical problems we were having that I really didn't get a chance to watch it, even though I had seen it the day before because, you know, or when it was released. Anyway, because it, so anyway, I'm glad I played it again. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Cause we need a good laugh. I think we'll probably have some laughs, as well coming up when Ellie Mistal joins us. Unfortunately, there's not much laughter in today's news. And oh my goodness, there's a lot going on. And in fact, since, you know, before, I started doing what's news. As I've told you, I wake up early in the morning. I mean, if I'm not already awake by six, Jackson gets me up because he runs the place. I just live here. So I start working on what's news probably around seven and finish it. I try to get it done by 10, sometimes earlier. And then stuff happens throughout the day. For instance, today, it begins. Oh, I should start with the what's news sounder, right? All right, we'll do this and we'll do it live.
I read the news today, oh boy.
Oh, my do it live is missing. Oh no. Hold on, I bet it's on this computer. Come on, Bill O'Reilly, where are you? There he
do
is.
Do it live.
Okay.
I'll write it and we'll do it live.
There we go. Better late than never.
Fucking thing sucks.
God, Bill, shush. All right, so it begins. A Senate committee today voted to authorize a subpoena as part of a Republican-led investigation targeting former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter. Yeah, the party line vote in the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee came amid vigorous objections from Democrats who have accused their Republican counterparts of pushing Russian disinformation and improperly using the Senate's resources to boost Donald Trump's reelection bid. Ay, ay, ay. Wednesday's vote authorizes the committee's chairperson, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, to subpoena Blue Star Strategies. That's a Democratic PR firm that did consulting work for Burisma. That's the Ukrainian energy company on whose board Hunter Biden sat. Johnson's probe focuses on allegations that Blue Star Strategies sought to leverage Biden's position on the board in order to influence matters at the Obama-era State Department. This is, you know, for years, I've been using a term that I coined. It started during the Bush administration when they would say one thing when the reality was another. I would talk about the frustrations I had in, you know, when I take calls on my radio show with talking to Republicans who just will not concede the truth. In other words, they'll fight you on everything, much like they do today. Up is down, in is out, green is black, you know, opposite world.
Everything you thought you knew, you never knew it all. Sideways is straight ahead. Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
And that's where we are today. Did you hear the latest with Trump in Michigan? Oy. So Donald Trump tweeted, breaking, Michigan sends absentee ballots to 7.7 million people ahead of the primaries in the general election. This was done illegally and without authorization by a rogue Secretary of State. I will ask to hold up funding to Michigan if they want to go down this voter fraud path. Okay, first of all, She didn't send absentee ballots to 7.7 million people. She sent applications for any of those eligible voters to get an absentee ballot so they can vote by mail in the election. There's nothing illegal about that. A rogue Secretary of State? She was elected by the people of Michigan. How is she rogue? And you're going to ask to hold up funding for Michigan if they want to go down this road? Sorry, that's illegal. Now, actually, after the tweet went out this morning, the Secretary of State of Michigan tweeted back. Her name is Jocelyn Benson. And she tweeted back. She said, "Hi, I also have a name. It's Jocelyn Benson. And we sent applications, not ballots, just like my GOP colleagues in Iowa, Georgia, Nebraska, and West Virginia." Yeah. And other legal experts responded en masse on the Twitter machines, saying that basically attempted extortion of states was anticipated and illegal. And the attempted extortion of states came from Daniel Goldman. He's the former federal prosecutor, I believe, or U.S. attorney, I guess the same thing, who was one of the prosecutors for the House Impeachment Committee. Anyway, but that's not all that's happening in Michigan today. And again, this one, well, I was going to say it doesn't have anything to do with politics, but it all has to do with politics. Our thoughts are with the people of Midland County, Michigan today, where the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, declared a state of emergency after two dams breached because of torrential downpours. Whitmer warned that downtown Midland, a city of 40,000 and the home of Dow Chemical, could be under 9 feet of water by this afternoon. They already evacuated about 100,000 people. It's just horrifying in the midst of all this, which reminds me, by the way, that hurricane season is right around the corner. It seems like we're getting an early start on the season because there was a storm out in the Gulf that luckily passed underneath us. You know, just what we need right on top of the pandemic. We've got the COVID and the hurricane season starting up and dams being breached in Michigan. Lovely. And on top of that, we have a rogue Secretary of State, as opposed to the Michigan Secretary of State, who was actually elected by the people. Mike Pompeo was not. He was chosen by Donald Trump. And remember when we used to worry about Jeff Sessions? Oh, my God. Well, Mike Pompeo's got a few problems happening right now. So you know that last week on Friday, the Trump administration abruptly fired Steve Linnick, the State Department's Inspector General. Then allegations arose saying that Linnick had been investigating Pompeo's alleged use of staffers from the State Department to perform personal errands, picking up dry cleaning, walking his dog, making reservations, things like that. Well, we've since learned of another more serious investigation that was also underway. The New York Times is reporting that Mike Pompeo declined to sit for an interview with the State Department's Inspector General, Steve Linnick. His inquiry into, that's my drum roll, whether the Trump administration acted illegally in declaring an emergency to bypass a congressional freeze on arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. So Pompeo said, no, I'm not going to sit for that interview. So instead, he chose to answer written questions. Remind you of anything there? Yeah. But this is proof that Pompeo was aware of the investigation, despite his previous statement denying that he knew he was under investigation. That's what he said the other day. I didn't know I was under investigation. Yeah. But wait, there's more. NBC News reporting today that until the coronavirus shut them down in March, Mike Pompeo and his wife held regular dinner parties that were known as Madison parties. The guest list usually included billionaire CEOs, Supreme Court justices, political heavyweights, and ambassadors. They'd arrive decked out in evening attire. They'd be escorted by private elevator to the dinner in the historic diplomatic reception rooms at the State Department, all on the taxpayer's dime, or more accurately, dollars. Now, State Department officials involved in the dinners said they had raised concerns internally that the events were essentially using federal resources to cultivate a donor and supporter base for Mike Pompeo's political ambitions, complete with extensive contact information that gets sent back to Susan Pompeo's personal Gmail address. And of course, the officials and others who attended the dinners told these facts on the condition of anonymity. Wow. By the way, Linick was the fourth inspector general to be fired by the Trump administration in the last 6 weeks. The Washington Post is now reporting that House Democrats plan to open an investigation into the firing of the Transportation Department's acting inspector general. More on that in a second. They're concerned that the move was tied to an ongoing investigation of Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao's dealings with the state of Kentucky. Elaine Chao, of course, is married to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and has faced questions about whether her department has given preferential treatment to projects in his state. And that acting inspector general is not one of the four that we've heard about who was fired by the Trump administration in the last 6 weeks because he was only acting. So now we know that there's at least five who were fired. Oh, yes. These are things that I will ask Ellie Mistal about because it is astounding. Absolutely astounding. All right. One more thing that I want to share with you, and I've got tons of audio that I didn't get to, but, you know, as the death toll in the U.S. passed 92,000 yesterday, Donald Trump was asked why we have so many more cases and more deaths than any other nation in the world. You probably heard his response, but I have to play this again because I'm blown away that we have such a moron sitting in the Oval Office. Here's what he said. Again, asked why we have so many more cases and deaths than any other nation in the world.
We lead in cases. That's because we have more testing than anybody else.
Oh, my God.
So we test much more than anybody else. Again, we're close to 14 million. It was said 12 and a half.
He's actually such a liar.
We're close to 14 million now. And so we have 14 million tests. And Germany, if they do 2 million, that's a lot. And others are doing 1 million. So if you're testing 14 million people, you're going to find many more cases. Many of these people aren't very sick, but they still go down as a case. So actually, the number of cases,
still go down as
we're also
case.
A much bigger country than most.
Oh, my God.
So when we have a lot of cases, I don't look at that as a bad thing. I look at that as, in a certain respect, as being a good thing, because it means our testing is much better.
What?
So if we were testing a million people instead of 14 million people, we would have far fewer cases. Right?
No.
So I view it as a badge of honor.
I view it as a badge of honor. He views it as a badge of honor that there are more deaths by far in the United States than in any other country in the world. I'm blown away by that. And hold on. I found there was a graphic on TV that I took a picture of because I had to see it. This is about the hydroxy. Never mind. I thought it was on the number of deaths. It is astounding. And when you look at the tabulations, at the death tolls and the counts of how many infected people are in each country, we are far and away above them all because of the incompetence leading this country, leading us, you know, down a path to ruin, leading us to death and destruction, leading us to be the joke, the unfunny joke around the nation, because we can't get a handle on this pandemic. And we had every opportunity to. All right. With that, I'm now calling Ellie Mistal. So Ellie Mistal is the justice correspondent for The Nation. He covers the courts, the criminal justice system, and politics. And he's the force behind the magazine's monthly column, Objection. You can follow him on Twitter at LENYC and definitely read him at thenation.com or The Nation magazine. Ellie Mistal, you with us?
I'm here.
There you are. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know these are just weird times we're living through, and I know you're busy because you're at home and you've got kids to take care of, yes?
Yeah, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and my wife is working from home, and my mother is working home. She lives with us, and so it's just a madhouse right now.
But there's got to be some. I'm trying to find the silver linings, and the silver lining here is you get to spend more time with your family, right?
Oh yeah, I know so much more about Pokemon now than I ever would have before the pandemic.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's weird. Like I'm a homebody by nature. So like the being forced to stay with my family, which I generally like, and in my house, which I generally like, hasn't been the worst thing for me. I feel like my adjustment to it has been a little bit easier than some other people. Nothing to really complain about.
You know, I follow your Twitter feed, and I get lots of joy from your Twitter feed because it's very informative and entertaining at the same time. But today I see that you're sort of conflicted over you're having a parental conundrum of sorts in that you're having to tell your kids to be quiet and you don't want to.
It's really unfair for them, I feel, right? Like, it's almost the summer. They're kids. They're supposed to be able to be loud and be rambunctious and be jumping on things. But because I'm working from home, my wife's working from home, like, we have to keep telling them to, like, be quiet and stay in their room, or, you know, because, you know, I did a call right now. My wife had a call an hour ago. She has a call an hour from now. Like, we have to turn the house, which used to be their play space, our home offices.
Right.
And that adjustment, while it's been like difficult for the adults, I think has been really hard on the children. And it's just, you're just always kind of worried about like how, yeah, forcing, you know, you don't want to force my 7-year-old to act like my coworker, right? Like, he's allowed to be 7.
Yeah. I feel for you. And thankfully, I'm long past those years. But my, you know, we each have our own issues to deal with during this quarantine. My daughter turned 21, stuck at home with me and my husband. You know, that's not really a way to celebrate your 21st birthday. We had a lovely bottle of champagne, but I felt so sorry for her.
Oh, so, God, I can't even imagine turning 21 and having to live with my mom. I would have gone nuts.
Right?
My mom would have gone nuts. I would have gone nuts.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a bad thing.
She's lucky because she has a really cool mom. But, you know, still, who wants to spend their 21st birthday stuck at home with their parents? Anyway, Ellie Mistal, you know, actually, I contacted you last week to ask you back on the show because I was enjoying your live tweeting of the first ever live streamed Supreme Court arguments. And a second first, actually, it was the first time the Supreme Court ever heard arguments over the phone. And I loved your observations, and I want to hear from you on that. But I was surprised to read that this was the first time you heard Supreme Court arguments in real time.
Yeah. So for as much as I report on the courts and interested in the courts, I've never actually been to First Street. I've never actually been to the Supreme Court. Now, people should know, court is public, right? Like we can get into like, you know, cameras in the courtroom, whatever. But like we are supposed to be able to see justice done in public and with full transparency. The Supreme Court is public. To go, you really do like get up early and stand in a line, or get a press pass and do a bunch of other, you know, stuff. Their press requirements are very, like, you have to wear a jacket, like, and I've just never bothered to like drag myself over to First Street to go see. There's also a bit of a philosophical point that I would make here, that I don't actually think oral arguments are all that important.
Right.
It's a little bit of a controversial opinion, but I tend to think that the judges make up their minds on how they're going to vote on a case and how they're going to decide based on the brief, based on their research, based on their clerks. I don't think oral arguments adds a lot to their kind of decision-making process. I think it's mainly just for show anyway. And so, like, from a ability to do my job kind of perspective, I've never felt that going there in person was particularly important.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to hear it all shake out. Like I think that, put it like this, I think that it's the kind of thing that the public can actually benefit from seeing, to see how they kind of think through the argument.
Right.
I just don't think that they matter a lot in terms of like what the ultimate decision is going to be.
Right. And I saw that a lot in following the hearings in real time, watching, listening to the arguments and reading Twitter along the way with you and following some of the people from SCOTUS blog and such. And a lot of people do have lawyers like yourself believe that, you know, the justices all read the briefs and everything before they hear the oral arguments. And the oral arguments generally are only like an hour or two, right? So as you're saying, most people believe the justices pretty much have their minds made up before oral arguments happen. This is their chance, I guess, to get any clarification, to ask any questions that they need clarified, or in some cases to showboat. Clarence Thomas has historically not spoken from the bench. He seems to like the hearings by telephone, because he was very loquacious last week.
I mean, look, I could spend easily the rest of my life disagreeing with Clarence Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Like, maybe two lifetimes disagreeing with Clarence Thomas. But I actually think that his historic silence during oral arguments is one of the more justified aspects of his personal philosophy and ideology. He, like me, tends to agree that oral arguments are not all that important. He doesn't ask questions, not because he can't think of anything to ask, but because he is there literally just to listen to what these other people are going to say. He doesn't feel like there's a lot of probative value in asking questions of the counselors. So I've actually been surprised, I think, that he, on the phone, I mean, every oral argument that we had over the phone, Thomas asked questions. I mean, I think past, you know, 20 years, he's asked like two questions from the bench.
Yeah.
And here he was asking questions every time he got to his point. I'm not exactly sure why he did that. I don't know if it was a little bit of, you know, pressure. He didn't want to seem like he wasn't engaged, and asking questions were a way to show that he was engaged with the argument. I don't know if that's why he did it, but it was certainly surprising to hear him speak at these arguments. But the other thing that it did very effectively is show the general public who was listening just how crazy Clarence Thomas is.
Yes, yes.
The guy's legal theories are radical and extreme, to say the least, and his questioning, you know, for the arguments that people listen to, were just, it's kind of hard if you're not, like, legally trained to understand it, but if you are legally trained, his questions were batty. They were awful, kind of like, why does the Constitution exist at all type of questions?
Ellie Mistal is with us, and thankfully, the courts, basically all the justices and the attorneys who were on the calls, all had decent phone lines. I know you're on a landline. Are you on a cordless phone and away from the base? Because we have a really lousy connection.
Yes, actually, I am on a cordless phone, and I am away from the base. I am on my landline, but I can
get... Can you get closer to the base?
I get closer if you want to risk hearing my children, I guess.
I'd rather hear your children, because you're breaking up terribly, and this sounds too horrible. So
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
All right. A little bit better?
Yes, a lot better. All right, so
okay. So
let me ask, and the one thing that I did notice is when I first tuned in to hear, it was the first of the two tax case about Donald Trump's taxes, and the first time they went to Clarence Thomas for questions, he wasn't there. And then they skipped over and went to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and then they came back to Thomas, and I was thinking he was either sleeping or in the bathroom. And we did hear somebody flush a toilet during the arguments. All the newscasters had a little fun with that.
We did. I think the best intelligence that it was actually Breyer flushed the toilet. I forget how we know that.
That's too much information.
Yeah. The conventional wisdom is that it was Breyer. Look, it's a difficult situation for the justices themselves, you know, too. They've literally been doing this job, some of them, for decades. This is a kind of completely different way of doing their job. And they're human. They have to adjust to it just like everybody else. So you try to give them a little bit of kind of human compassion and leeway as they try to, you know, figure out how to still be professional in this new environment.
Right. Now, so let's get into some of the legalities of that, the case dealing with Trump's taxes. There were two. One, the first one was about the congressional subpoenas for his financial records and his taxes. And the second one was a subpoena from New York's attorney general for Trump's financial statements and taxes. Jay Sekulow, Trump's personal lawyer, argued in the second case, and I got my biggest laugh of the day. I'm trying to look at this as sort of a comedy show, because if I don't laugh, I'm going to cry. That, and it was that his argument was that these cases would be too big a distraction from Trump's presidential responsibilities. Did I hear that?
While Jay Sekulow was making that argument, Trump was doing rage tweets about Obamagate, by the way, right? So, Sekulow was arguing that Trump would be distracted from his, like, very difficult schedule of rage tweeting on and playing golf, right? It is impossible to overstate how ridiculous the Trump argument here is on both cases, right? A government subpoena is one of the most basic forms of law and law enforcement that we have. There is no wiggle room in terms of whether or not you answer a government subpoena. The answer is always yes. You have to answer it. That's just basic law. Now, the way you answer it, there is some wiggle room. You can answer fully. You can claim privilege. You can do a lot of things in terms of the fullness with which you answer a government subpoena. But Trump is arguing that he should be allowed to only answer part of the subpoena, or that it's overbroad, or that he's not making any of these legal arguments. He's arguing that straight up the government subpoena cannot be enforced against him and him alone because he happens to be the president. And that's just a crazy argument that has never been made in American history before. And it's ridiculous to me to think that we're even entertaining this argument. That's how off the wall it is.
It is. And did you get a feeling from hearing the questions posed by the justices, how they were leaning?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the conservatives aren't trying to buy the ball here, right? At least three of them are totally in the tank for this idea that Trump is above the law.
Wow.
Thomas, Alito, and Kavanaugh are totally there and will almost certainly vote to let Trump escape from these subpoenas. John Roberts is trying to split the baby. He's trying to make a distinction between the first case, which involved the House of Representatives making a subpoena, versus the second case, which involves New York District Attorney Cy Vance making the request. He's trying to say that because Congress is like a political unit, their subpoena somehow doesn't matter,
right?
But the prosecutor's subpoena, that probably still matters. So Roberts is trying to figure out how to split the baby. Neil Gorsuch is actually the interesting one, where I think he might actually be in play. Even though Gorsuch is an arch-conservative, you know, Nicole, there's this thing where, like, the people you have to worry about are the second-wave revolutionaries. Like, the first-wave revolutionaries kind of understand that they're just using their ideology, philosophy, whatever, to grab power. Mm. But it's the second way, it's the next generation that actually believes the crazy ideology of the original revolution. And that's kind of Neil Gorsuch, right? Like, unlike Antonin Scalia, who kind of understood originalism as a way to grab power, Gorsuch kind of actually believes that originalism is real. And while that's generally terrifying, in a case like this, it might work out where if you actually believe in originalism and textualism and all this stuff, then it becomes extremely hard to figure out how the original intent of the founders was to create an office of president that was more like a king than an agent than somebody who was bound by law. It's just hard for Gorsuch to get there ideologically.
Hmm.
And so you could actually see him in the oral arguments kind of struggling with this issue.
And what about Roberts? I mean, he was the one who You know, he was the swing vote, if you will, on the Affordable Care Act. I know that's coming up again, but last time he's the one who kept it from being completely trashed. Is he going to? Does he worry about the, you know, the legacy of the Roberts Court to not be a shill for this grifter who's in the Oval Office?
Mainstream media says that Roberts is an institutionalist who cares about legacy and the institutional power of the Supreme Court. I believe that Roberts is a selfish man who cares about his own personal legacy more than he cares about anything else. Now, how does that play out in this case? Well, what we've seen from Roberts pretty much since Trump was elected, but certainly since Kavanaugh got on the court and they had a solid conservative majority, is that Roberts is trying to bend the law towards the Republican agenda as much as he can without completely breaking it and making himself look like another shit. That he cares about completely breaking, but is the difference between Roberts and Sam Alito, right? That he doesn't actually care about. The law can be broken.
Ellie, have you drifted away from the base again? Because I'm losing you again.
Roberts, from Alito, is Roberts.
I completely lost you. You're just totally breaking up on me. We are speaking with Ellie Mistal, but we've got a really lousy phone connection. I can try calling you back, but I think it's the cordless phone that maybe is losing power or something.
Okay, want to try calling back on my? Just try it again.
Okay, just call, hang up and try you back? Oh, all right, we'll do that. All right, we are speaking with Ellie Mistal, or we're trying to anyway. I know the phone line has got me as freaked out, you know, more freaked out than you, because I'm sitting here trying to say, no, it's got to be better than this. Hopefully.
Hello?
All right, we'll try this.
Any better?
I don't know yet. We'll find out. So Ellie Mistal is with us. So, the Supreme Court, we don't know, and then there was the other case having to do with birth control. I couldn't even really listen to that one because it was so upsetting seeing how far we've fallen back by way of progress for, you know, you name it, whether it's women or minorities or, I mean, just social justice we've taken five giant steps backwards, it seems, since Donald Trump took office. We should be. Okay, now I can tell you it's not better. It's not better. You know what? I don't have your cell phone, but can I give you my call in number and you can call me back? Because honestly, we're hearing like every third syllable. I'm sorry?
Let me get a pen.
Okay. You ready?
Go for it.
954.
Okay.
889-6410.
Okay,
bye. Now, nobody else call in, so because I'm going to answer it when Ellie calls in. Again, I'm trying. You know, best laid plans. I thought I had to say we were not doing video today. It would be an easy, no problem thing. And and then this happened. So I don't know. We're just waiting for Ellie Mistal to call back. And there we go. Hi, Ellie Mistal.
Hi, Nicole.
It's still breaking up, but all right, we'll do our best. I also want to ask you about the esteemed or not so esteemed Attorney General Bill Barr. Now, we've had some, pardon my French, fucked up attorneys general before. Remember when we were freaked out over Jeff Sessions and there was John Mitchell? But Bill Barr seems to be in a class of his own. What are your thoughts on Bill Barr?
I think all the other attorney generals in history, including the one with Gonzalez,
I think the gremlins are out to get us, Ellie, because I'm just not hearing you.
I've got all the bars right now on my phone. Anything?
Now I heard anything.
I was saying I have all the bars on my phone.
Yeah.
I was just saying that the other attorney generals in history have their credibility rests on the appearance of impartiality. Bill Barr has no desire to even appear in special.
Okay, wait, but I want to translate. I think you said an attorney general depends on the appearance of impartiality. Is that what you said? This is not working. Ellie, I'm so sorry. We're just breaking up horribly.
I don't know what else to do in the...
No, I don't either. We're going to have to, well, we'll have to try this again another time. I'm really not hearing. I'll send you a segment so you can hear how bad it is. I would suffer through it, but we're really only hearing like every third syllable or something.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
I so appreciate your work, and I really appreciate your input. And I'll reach out to you again, and hopefully in a week or two we can try it again.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No problems. Thank you so much, Ellie Mistal. I'll send everyone over to read your stuff instead of hearing you today. All right. I'm sorry about that, everybody. I figured there was no sense in keeping going because... I couldn't hear him, and I know you couldn't either. So, two things. We've got 8 minutes or so left. I will open the phone lines should you care to weigh in on anything that's going on. What I wanted to mention to him is, I mean, the latest stuff with Bill Barr is all this stuff with Flynn, which I went into before we got Ellie on the line, is really reprehensible. And I know that, you know, something like 2,000 former Justice Department officials signed on to a letter demanding Barr resign. And what I did hear Ellie Mistal say is that, an attorney general has to at least have the appearance of being impartial, and Barr has none of that. None of that. So, what's going on with him is just horrible. And then, You've got Obama. You've got Trump and his minions screaming about Obamagate. Well, nobody knows what the fuck Obamagate is. There is no such thing. And when they're asked to explain it, there is no explanation because there is no such thing. So, you know, again, I mentioned earlier opposite world. We are just in opposite world. For instance, I know you hate it when I play Trump's sound. You know what? I'll play here. This is a very quick clip. What's her name? McEnany? Whatever her name. McEnany, the new press secretary. She was asked a question about, I think it was about Trump taking the hydroxychloroquine or something else that he was lying about. And listen to her answer.
The president of the United States said it. And if it were any other president of the United States, the media would take him at his word.
If it was any other president of the United States, the media would take him at his word. Because any other president of the United States didn't lie every time he opened his mouth. So there's that. There's a lot going on, even though the Congress is not back in session. The Senate has been holding hearings. And in fact, there was a hearing yesterday in, I believe, the Banking Committee, and it was with Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin and, the Fed Chair, Jerome Powell, witnesses, and everyone was doing it virtually. They were all on computer. I happened to tune in right when Sherrod Brown was questioning Steve Mnuchin on the horrible way we treat essential workers in this country during this pandemic, during the lockdown, when most of us are out of work. And Sherrod Brown, who I floated as a possible last minute replacement for Joe Biden on the ballot, just saying if it's ever necessary, that I think he would make a great candidate. Anyway, I was even more impressed with Sherrod Brown after hearing his questioning of Steve Mnuchin. Here's a little bit of it.
The people who are that we call the essential workers, and we call out and thank those essential workers, are often the lowest paid workers. They do the laundry. They're the custodians, the security people. They prepare our food. They put their lives on the line for very low wages. And they're still worried about their paying the bills. Is that fair?
Well, Mr. Senator, I just want to thank all the essential workers, whether it be the healthcare people,
thanking is great, but these are people. Is it fair that our economy pays the essential workers so little in such work conditions?
Mr. Senator, some of those people are paid less than others.
My question is that fair?
Again, Mr. Senator, I don't know what specific workers you're referring to.
I can lay them all out. I'll try the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Mr. Chairman, is it fair that those workers who are exposing themselves to this virus, that are making low wages, we call them essential by all of our definitions? Is that fair?
No.
You know, those are workers who are in basically in the service sector. That's what's unusual.
Oh, thanks for letting us know, Mr. Powell.
Particularly those parts of the service sector that are
low paying. Sorry, the clip ends there. Jerome Powell didn't have much of an answer either. But Steve Mnuchin, our thoughts go out to them. And I love that Sherrod Brown just cut him off. Excuse me. No. Yeah. And then I need to play this because I've been going off on Mike Pompeo today for good reason. Mike Pompeo and Bill Barr need to both be put on a Carnival cruise ship and sent out on the cruise to Coronaville like yesterday. Two more worthless people, I can't imagine, and they're both crooked as hell. So Mike Pompeo, let me just play this clip for you because the only thing I can think of when I hear how Mike Pompeo didn't answer this question is what a fucking asshole.
You have said, sir, that Mr. Linick was undermining the department's mission. What exactly does that...
Now, Mr. Linick was the inspector general of the State Department who was fired, from what we're hearing and what even Trump said, at Pompeo's request.
Mean? Can you give us examples? Even the president doesn't know what that means. He says he didn't really know about the guy before you mentioned it. So what specifically has Mr. Linick done?
Yeah, unlike others, I don't talk about personnel matters. I don't leak to y'all. I'll just say this. I can't talk. I can't give you specificity. We'll share with the appropriate people the rationale, but no, there should be no mistake.
But he's there, a stability official. Is it a secret as to why he was fired?
May I answer the question, if you will? I appreciate the question. Let's be clear. There are claims that this was for retaliation.
Yeah.
For some investigation that the inspector general's office here was engaged in. It's patently false. I have no sense of what investigations were taking place inside the inspector general's
office. Bullshit.
Couldn't possibly have retaliated for all the things. I've seen the various stories that someone was walking my dog to sell arms to my
dry
cleaner.
Nobody said anything about selling arms to anybody.
It's all crazy stuff. So I didn't have access to that
Bullshit.
Information, so I couldn't possibly have retaliated. It would have been
impossible. Bullshit.
There's one exception. I was asked a series of questions in writing. I responded to those questions with respect to a particular investigation.
Which
that
you
was
just said you didn't know anything about.
Earlier this year, as best I can recall.
God, he's such a liar.
Those questions. I don't know the scope. I don't know the nature of that investigation, other than what I would have seen from the nature of the questions that I was presented.
Oh, my God.
Right. I don't know if that investigation is continuing. I don't know if that investigation has been closed out. I don't have any sense of that. Again, it's not possible that further have been retaliation.
Bullshit. He answered the questions in writing because he declined to sit for the in-person interview about this issue, this issue being arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, without trying to do an end run around Congress. He refused to answer in person. He answered the questions in writing. He knew there was an investigation. He is a fucking liar. And hey, Mike Pence or Mike Pompeo or both of you or all of you, I've got a song for you. All right. And with that, we are just out of time. What a day this has been. I was hoping to get through today with no technical problems. And at least I know it's not only me. It's CBS News as well. It's all of television, but it doesn't make it any better on my part. I'm so sorry. Just got an email from Ellie apologizing, saying, usually what he said, I'm so sorry. Usually my landline is the most stable connection in the whole house. So... you know what? He'll just have to come back on the show again sometime soon. And he'll have to get a landline that's not a cordless phone, but an actual plugged in. Or just charge the phone before you come on. All right. With that, we are done. Let me tell you what's coming up. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here as usual. We will get through our list of progressive candidates still on the ballot who we need to vote for in the primaries because we need them to win in November. So we'll do that with Howie tomorrow. On Friday, Governor Don Siegelman will be here. Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama, who was a political a prisoner in this country at the hands of Karl Rove and the George W. Bush administration. His story is unbelievable, and I'm reading his book now. And when the book comes out in the middle of June, we're going to do almost a full hour on it. But he's going to join us this Friday because this is a man who's run a lot of elections, and he's got ideas of what the Democrats need to do to win. So we'll talk to him. And Monday is Memorial Day. But since we had so much fun this past Monday with a Music Monday show, we're going to do it again this coming Monday. Memorial Day, whatever. I can't go to the beach, so what? We'll do a show. And my old friend Dan Navarro will be here. And so I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway, hopefully the technical problems are gone now. Gremlins, be gone! All right, I'll see you tomorrow, everyone. Thanks for bearing with me. Bye.